Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, chapter entitled Elements of Material Creation, text number 13. Satvam Jnanam Raja Karma. Transformation. Kala. Kala. Svabhava. Innate tendency. Nature. Sutram. Mahatattva. Eva. Indeed. Cha. Also. Translation and Prabhupada by his composition. In this world, the mode of goodness is recognized as knowledge. The mode of passion is fear of God. The mode of darkness is ignorance. Time is perceived as the agitated interaction of individual minds. And the totality of functional propensity is embodied in the primeval sutra or Mahatattva. Translation responsibly. In this world, the mode of goodness is recognized as knowledge. The mode of passion as fruit of work. The mode of darkness as ignorance. Time is perceived as the agitated interaction of the material modes. And the totality of functional propensity is embodied by the primeval sutra or Mahatattva. The impetus for the interaction of the material elements is the forward movement of time. Because time is passing, the embryo grows within the womb, gradually comes out, grows up, produces byproducts, dwindles and dies. All of this is due to the pushing of time. In the absence of the time factor, the material elements do not interact, but remain inert in the form of pradana. Lord Krishna is establishing the basic categories of the material world so that the human beings can conceive of the Lord's creation. Were the categories not condensed, analysis and conceptualization would be impossible, since the Lord's potencies are infinite. Although there are numerous divisions of material elements within the basic divisions, the spirit soul is always to be understood as distinct, as a distinct transcendental element meant for resonance in the kingdom of God. Omagyan Timurandasya Kinunjana Shalakaya Chari Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaha Padontikam Vancha kaupa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhyevacha pititanam pavanebhyo vaishna vebhyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaur Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So in this chapter, and also in this verse, Krishna is describing the totality of the material elements which are necessary for the creation of the material world. So, he's describing, first of all, there are three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature interact with kala, or the time factor. And then, by the interaction of the modes and the time factor on the material elements, then we have the material creation. So this is called jnana. Or understanding the difference between matter and spirit. In the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described, one of the purposes of the Bhagavatam is to differentiate the difference between matter and spirit. So this is necessary. In order to extricate ourselves from the material energy, we must understand what we are and what we are not. Therefore, we analyze the material nature, or Krishna analyzes the material nature for us, so that we can understand the difference between matter and spirit. What is matter? What is spirit? So what is matter? Right. Matter has different constituents. Right, three modes of material nature, the elements themselves, the time factor. And then what is spirit? The spirit is the jiva, who is separate from the material energy. So this process is called neti-neti, or analyzing. Not this, not this. I am not material. I am not the senses. Right? I am not the knowledge-acquiring senses. I'm not the working senses. Right? I'm not the sense objects. I'm not the Mahabhutas, or the five great elements. Right? I am not the mind. Thank God. I'm not the intelligence. I'm not the Ahankara, or the false ego. But I am something separate from all of these elements. So this process is called jnana, or neti-neti. Extricating oneself from the material energy. That I am not this, I am not this, I am not this, so then what am I? Aham Brahmasmi. I am spirit. I am something which is entirely different from the material elements. Now, basically in philosophy, from Indian philosophy, or from Vedic philosophy, not Vedic, but from ancient Eastern philosophy, there are basically two schools of thought. Right? One is the school of personalism, and the other school is impersonalism. Right? There's basically two schools of thought. And you see in the Western world these days, it is basically all philosophy is within these two schools also. Right? Either we are personalistic or we are impersonalistic. Now, if you analyze the material energy, and then you realize that I am not the material energy, and you realize Ahambrahmasmi, must be, what am I? Then you'll understand that I am spirit, but then, what is the nature of spirit? Now, according to the impersonalistic conception, then spirit is supreme, and I am part of that supreme. Therefore, Prabhupada describes this as the last snare of Maya, or illusion. It's very attractive, right? I couldn't become anything significant in this material world, but at least I can become something significant in the spiritual sense. I can become God. So it's very attractive. I failed at everything else. But that's okay, because actually I'm God. Even though I'm a total loser, and I cannot become successful at anything in the material world, but actually that's okay, because I'm God. And because I'm God, that is the last hour of my, oh, I am supreme. And if you're so supreme, why do you have so many problems in your life? Oh, because I'm an illusion now. This is the philosophy. No, it's actually nonsensical to actually think that I am supreme and yet I have so many problems. But that's just because I'm in Maya at this point in time. But as soon as I wake up and realize that Maya is false, then I'll merge back into the Brahma Jyoti. I'll become one with the supreme, with the supremacy, or with the supreme energy, and then I will be supreme once again. And knowing my supremacy, all problems will be solved. Right? It's illogical. Right? And Prabhupada was so heavy. If you read Prabhupada's purports, just like I've been teaching Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Shastri for the last 7 years, and reading Prabhupada's purports continuously. And you see in Prabhupada's purports, he just hammers again and again and again on Mayavad philosophy, right? Impersonalistic philosophy. And after a while, I was wondering, why does Prabhupada keep doing this? Why does he just keep hitting on this point? Right? Because it is false. Right? It is illusion. It is Maya. To think that you can become God, or to think you can become one with the Supreme, to think that you are the Supreme, this is illusion. It is illogical, but it is very attractive. And that's why so many people are into this philosophy, both in the East and the West. Because I can become the Supreme, I am the Supreme, which is basically our false ego. It is the last snare of Maya. To think that I am the supreme entity, I am the supreme energy. So therefore, Prabhupada attacks this again and again and again. Because when you differentiate between matter and spirit, and you realize you are spirit, you realize you are spiritual energy, you are the soul, then you must then understand what is your position in eternity, or what is your function, or what is your constitutional nature, or what is your occupation in eternity. Right? Once you understand that you are the soul, then what do you do for eternity? The soul is eternal. So if you're eternal, now you must understand, what is my purpose for eternity? Right? So this is where the personalistic philosophy of the Vedas, which is actually the philosophy of the Vedas, this is what answers the question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that actually Mayavad philosophy is demoniac because it confuses the living entity, and it distracts the living entity away from his actual nature. Because actually the Vedas only teach one philosophy, actually. The Mayavad interpretation of the Vedas is actually asuric. It is actually demoniac. It's based on a personal motivation to become one with God. But factually speaking, the actual nature of the living entity is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Sarupahoi Krishnera Nichadas. Krishnera Tatashta Shakti, Beda Prakash. that the living entity is Jivara Swarupa Hoy. We are Jiva, Jivatma. That means we are the soul, right? Swarupa. What does Swarupa mean? Swa. No, not so. Swa. Yeah, swa means my own. That is mine. Right? That swa. My rupa. Rupa means, you can say form, or technically speaking, we say beauty. Swa rupa. Rupa means rupa Goswami, rupa Manjari. Rupa means beautiful, beautiful Manjari. Like that. So Swarupa, what is our own essential beautiful form? Because in the spiritual world, the soul is beautiful. There's no ugliness in the spiritual world, right? Everyone is like Krishna. Krishna is Shama Sundara. Sundara means like beautiful. So everyone in the spiritual world is reflected like Krishna. No one is ugly in the spiritual world. Everyone is very beautiful. That is the nature of the soul. Why is the soul beautiful? Because internally the soul is beautiful. If someone is very attractive in this world, they're very beautiful, but they have very negative qualities, and suddenly they become ugly, they become unattractive. Just like you see some very famous fashion models, I won't mention their names, in case, because these classes go on the internet. So, but some very famous fashion models, but they're very famous for behaving improperly in public, very arrogant behavior. And they become very disrespectful to other people. So immediately they become unattractive. Very beautiful body, but unattractive. Because actual beauty is within. If someone is very beautiful, they're beautiful within their beautiful qualities. So who is the most beautiful woman in all of the creation? Radhika. Srimati Radharani is the most beautiful. And why? Because she's the most beautiful within. Her qualities are the most sublime. They're the most attractive to Krishna. She's the most selfless. She is the most devoted. She is supreme in every respect. As we said, I think, last week or recently, Srimati Radharani herself, Jiva Goswami says, she is so qualified that just her alone is enough to satisfy Krishna. She is so qualified that just by herself she can fully satisfy Krishna. Like that. And we are all there just to share in her ecstasy. That is the purpose of our existence. Like that. So, Swarupa. Rupa means one's own beauty or one's own form. Right? One becomes beautiful when one begins to serve Krishna. That's when a devotee becomes attractive. You may be a very great devotee, so-called great. Right, we say, oh, this devotee is very great, they're very advanced, they're very recognized, right? But that devotee becomes attractive when they serve Krishna, right? You might become so-called an advanced devotee, and then everyone starts serving you, because everyone thinks, oh, they're more advanced than me, so I'll offer service to them. But then if that devotee who is being offered the service, if they become complacent, or if they become... if they get onto the platform of thinking I am the enjoyer, and if they become affected by pratishta, or the desire for adoration, and they accept that for themselves, and suddenly they become very attractive. They lose their devotional potency. We only remain attractive as devotees as long as we're serving Krishna. Just like when you see a devotee serving, like you walk into the temple room and someone's sweeping the floor, you think, oh, that devotee is such a good devotee. Immediately they become attractive. It is bhakti which attracts the soul or the minute atma to Bhagavan, to the Supreme Soul. How else are we going to attract God? How can you attract God? Very difficult to attract God. You can say, well, God, I can do so many things. Just like in this world, there are people who can do so many things. You can say, I can juggle 12 balls at once. So you come before Krishna and you go, like that, right? And then Krishna's looking and he's going, wow. You know. And then Krishna says, check this out. And then he just starts throwing planets around. Like that, you know. But what are we going to do to attract Krishna? You know, I can spin in my head, you know, right on my head, like, you know, just like spinning in front of Krishna. Krishna's got them. We can't, how are we going to attract Krishna? Nothing attracts Krishna. Right? Krishna is better than everyone else at everything. So what's going to attract him? Right? The only thing that attracts him is bhakti. That attracts Krishna. That actually controls Krishna. Krishna notices. All that devotee is serving. And he's serving so nicely, so humbly. This is what actually attracts Krishna. Humility in service. Right? As long as the service has some desire for recognition, right, then that much it taints the service. Right? Just like you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses the example. You have a white piece of cloth, and if there's just one little spot on that white piece of cloth, right, then everyone goes, oh, look at that. That is, there's some fault there, some defect there. So similarly, we do our service for Krishna, but if there's pratishta, or the desire for recognition, or if we're keeping something for ourselves, then it contaminates the service. Right? And then Krishna thinks, oh, it's so nice, you're doing so much service, but what is this little defect which is there? Krishna says you have to remove that. That is defective. Like that. So, bhakti, when it becomes soaked in humility, and this is an interesting point. This is described by Sanatana Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He says that humility and prema are synonymous. Right? There's no difference between prema, or love for Krishna, and humility. It means actual humility. Right? The two things are the same. They're not separate. Right? Bhakti means it must be done with humility. Right? If there's not humility in the bhakti, that is not pure bhakti. Right? That is mishra bhakti. It is mixed bhakti. Pure bhakti means there must be humility in the service. Just like last night, I went to give the Bhakti Vaibhav class. We drove up from the farm, arrived in Melbourne, got set up, and then 5 minutes before the course began, it got hijacked. I was just sitting there, and then suddenly someone just took the Bhakti Vaibhav course and disappeared. Right? The devotees came and they said, Stana Dutri Mataji, Madhava Prabhu, and Giriraj Gopal are going to leave Australia tomorrow, which is now today. They're leaving tonight. So we want to have some final send-off for them. So then I surrendered to the desire of the devotees, and we had some appreciation of them. All the devotees came into the theatre and they were there, and all the devotees spoke very kindly of their fond attachment to them and fond remembrances of them. And this often happens amongst the devotees, is that we don't always realize the devotees who are walking amongst us or who are sitting next to us. You know, we take it for granted, oh, this devotee is there, that devotee is there. But when they leave, when devotees leave, or when we don't have the devotees association anymore, then sometimes we realize, oh, how great they actually are. Mm-hmm. So we understood when we were glorifying those two devotees last night, actually they are exceptional devotees. They're not ordinary devotees. Even though you just might think, oh, there they are when we see them from time to time, or we see them every day. But actually they're not ordinary devotees. Right? And we see what is the nature of their bhakti. We see the nature of their bhakti is they do their bhakti without desire for recognition. That is the nature of their bhakti. And that is what attracts Krishna, and that is what makes a devotee great. A great devotee is not someone who does so much service. A devotee is, he can do any service. It can be great service or it can be simple service, but he does not desire to be recognized for that service. Just like it was described last night that Madhava Prabhu, sometimes he would go into the kitchen to help cooking for Sunday feast or for one of the catering jobs, and he would just be in the corner, quiet, all day, from the very beginning to the very end, just cutting the vegetables. Right? No desire for recognition, right? No desire for honor, no desire for fame, just desiring to please Krishna. To be Das, Das, Amadas, servant of the servant of the servant of Radha and Krishna. Right? That is pure bhakti, like that. So this is what we need to develop if you want to attract Krishna. Krishna can be attracted, and he is attracted. Krishna likes to be attracted. He likes to be attracted to us, but we have to learn what attracts him. We have to develop that quality of devotion that will attract him. So this is what the personal path teaches. This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of the Vedas, this is what it teaches. It teaches that bhakti must become ahoitiki apratihata. It must be uninterrupted and unmotivated. Then Krishna becomes attracted. So this is the nature of the soul. So here in this verse it is describing what is the nature of the soul. So we analyze, Krishna is analyzing to Uddhava, for all of us, what is the difference between matter and spirit. So he says that there is pradhan. What is pradhan? Pradhan. What's that? Inner, yeah. Before the creation takes place, that is called pradhan. Right? You take all the elements, you take all of this that we see around us now, all the variety, and you just bring that back into its original homogeneous form. You merge all the elements together. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, they just merge into one. Mind, intelligence, and egos, they merge into one. It just becomes like a homogeneous, like kind of, I suppose it'd be like a lump of clay or something. Just like everything just becomes extracted. All the senses, all the sense objects, right? Everything comes into one. That is called pradhan. That is primeval. Before the creation takes place, before all this manifests, it is just one homogeneous one homogeneous substance like pradhan. Pradhan is very interesting actually, because no one's ever seen pradhan. Right? Hands up if you remember seeing pradhan. Right? No one's ever seen it. Right? It's just something which is described. So it's indescribable because no one's ever seen pradhan. Krishna says this is pradhan when everything merges back into itself, but no one knows what it is because no one ever saw it. Right? Because every time pradhan takes place, we're all asleep. We're all back within the body of Mahavishnu. And then pradhan is there, and then by the time we come out, it's all, everything's manifested once again. So there is pradhan. And then pradhan becomes agitated by Krishna's glance, or Mahavishnu's glance. And the glance of Mahavishnu is made up of 16 different shaktis. And four, you could say, are principles. Ishta Shakti, Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, and Kala Shakti. Kala Shakti means the time element. When the Lord glances at the pradhan, he glances and time impregnates the pradhan. The material energy is there, unmanifest, all the energy is there. He glances and the jivas travel through that glance, carried by Lord Shiva or Shambhu towards that energy. And then when it hits that energy, that glance, that energy, Kriya, Jnana, Ichcha, and Kala, the time element, goes, and everything begins to become agitated, and then it all begins to manifest like that. So then, the different forms begin to manifest. And how do the forms begin to manifest? By the interaction of the three gunas, or the three modes of nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. Now Krishna describes in this verse to Uddhava, basically describes the entire creation in a very simple form, in a very sutra-like form. He says that the three modes have three particular qualities. What is the particular quality, or the principle? There's many qualities, but what is the principal quality of the mode of ignorance? It's on the board. You can look at it if you want. Darkness, yeah. It is called avidya. Or I think here it says agyana. Let us find the Sanskrit. Tama. Agyana. Agyana. That is the principal quality of the mode of ignorance is agyana. Agyan means ignorance. Right? So the principal qualities of the mode of ignorance is procrastination, laziness, uncleanliness, sleep, and madness. Right? If you too much associate with the mode of ignorance, then you'll develop all these negative qualities. So do they sound very conducive for bhakti? Do they sound very conducive for devotional service? What is wrong with being in the mode of ignorance? What is wrong with sleeping in the Bhagavatam class? You sleep in the Bhagavatam class. If you're too much in the mode of ignorance, if you sleep in the Bhagavatam class, you probably won't get so much benefit. Therefore, it is recommended that our bhakti not be practiced in the mode of ignorance. It's interesting because in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila, in his teachings to Devahuti, he describes that bhakti can be practiced in all of the three modes. We can still be practicing bhakti, but be very much under the influence of the modes. So he says that bhakti in the mode of ignorance is symptomized by the fact that the devotees quite often become angry. Do sometimes you experience like that? There may be particular devotees. Hopefully it's not ourselves who are this particular devotee, hopefully, that always become angry at the other devotees. You're serving with them, but they become angry all the time. Always disturbed in their consciousness, always very moody, very tamasic, become angry with the other devotees too much, And then, under the influence of the... although they're doing bhakti and sincerely they're trying to serve Guru and Krishna, but because they're influenced by the mode of ignorance, they become angry and they commit aparad. And as soon as you commit offences to the devotees, it completely disturbs or... what's the word? Disrupts or interrupts your devotional service. Your devotional service becomes very much hampered or very much disturbed when you offend other devotees. This is a symptom of committing devotional service in the mode of darkness or ignorance, always angry. Devotees should not be yelling. Sometimes I hear down at the kitchen, down at the back of the... It's not my department. My department's in a different part of the temple. When I come here, I do service and that. But sometimes I hear down the kitchen, devotees yelling at each other. What is this nonsense? It is nonsense, like that. The kitchen belongs to who? Oh, really? Srimati Radharani, it's her kitchen. Prabhupada describes that the kitchen is non-different from the deity room. Would you be yelling when you're in the deity room? So why are you yelling in the kitchen? Oh, you're yelling in Radharani's kitchen. So who the hell are you? You obviously think you're someone very, very prominent and very significant that you can yell in Radharani's kitchen. So this is nonsense. It's not good. One should not be like that. Devotional service, that means that is mode of ignorance. And it is aparad. It is offense. And it will very much disturb your progress in devotional life. Then Kapila describes there is devotional service in the mode of passion. What are the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of passion? If you look here at the analysis of mode of passion, then what is the analysis? How does Krishna describe passion? How do we understand the mode of passion? What is its principal attribute or its principal quality? Yeah, attachment to the results. Krishna says here, he says karma. Karma means activity. That is the mode of passion. Basically, the material world is primarily mode of passion, rajagun, because everyone's very active. Right? Come on, let's do it. Let's do it. We've got to do it. Like that. We've got to be active. Like that. That's the mode of passion. Like that. Devotees are also very active for Krishna, but not controlled by the mode of passion. In other words, mode of passion means you become very fruitive. And Kapila describes in the mode of passion, when you do devotional service in the mode of passion, you become very attached to the result. Why do you become attached to the result? Right? Not attached to the result for Krishna, but attached to the result for me. Right? Because devotional service, we also become attached to the result. You know, if we get into a more elevated state of consciousness, we become attached to the result, but then we give that result to Krishna. Bhaktaram Jagyatapasam. Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of the activity. Right? You can do the service, but all has to be given to me. That's why people think the Hare Krishna people are crazy. They say to us, sometimes we distribute books on the street, and they say, I'm not going to give you a donation, because you give all the money to the guru. Right? You work so hard, and then all the result you give to someone else. You're crazy. Yeah? You should be working hard and keeping it yourself and enjoying it yourself. You collect all this money and then you just give it away. Like that. You're crazy. No, you people. It's funny because Rohini Sutta Prabhu, who's one of the gurus in our movement, is one of the top book distributors, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. One day he was on the street and he was distributing books, and this lady said, you're crazy. I'm not going to give any money to you. You give it all to the guru. And he said, well, I am the guru. He said, I am a guru. Like, you know, I do collect all the money, but then I give it to my guru. Like that. People think this is crazy. No, you keep it all yourself. You should keep it all yourself. They think that is sanity. That's insanity. Aham mameti. Everything is for I, and everything is mine. This is material consciousness. Everything is for me. No, everything is for Guru and Krishna. So this is how the devotees think. So devotees do their service, but then they offer the result to Krishna. Whereas, in the mode of passion, you do the service, but then you keep all the result for yourself. So Lord Kapila describes in the third canto, when he's describing devotional service in the mode of passion, he says the devotees in the mode of passion also tend to become angry. Because they're trying to do their service, but it's their service, and when some other devotee interrupts their service, they become angry. They become disturbed. I'm serving the guru. So the temple room is crowded. Right, the guru is sitting over there giving the lecture, right? And you walk in and you just step over all the other devotees to give your guru the glass of water. So you offend all the other devotees, but then you've served your guru so devotedly. So this is mode of ignorance, mode of passion. You're doing devotional service, but the symptom of the Kanishtha Adhikari is that he thinks, I am very advanced. My guru is also very advanced, probably about the same as me. And everyone else they're sincere. They're really trying to get it together, but they just haven't quite worked it all out yet. But they'll get there. And they're very fortunate because I happen to be in this. I happen to be in this temple, so I don't know what pious activities they did in the previous lifetime. But they took birth here, which is good, because now they've all got a hope to make it back to Godhead, if they stay associated with me. Like that, so. So this is Kanishta Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari means he's sincere. The nature of the Kanishta Adhikari is they are sincere. They want to serve Krishna, but they're very much self-absorbed. You see, sometimes devotees are like this, right? Very much self-absorbed. Hopefully we're not like this, right? Just, it's very much about us. It's my spiritual advancement, which is important. But when devotees become advanced, they're very concerned about their spiritual progress, but they're equally concerned about helping others advance as well. They take their sadhana very seriously, but they also dedicate themselves to helping others become Krishna conscious. Like that, not worried just about ourselves all the time. Or in other words, the symptom of a devotee in the mode of passion, they go out and distribute a lot of books, but then what they're interested in at the end of the day is what my book score was. Was I the number one book distributor in the temple? Right, that. Was I number one book distributor on the planet? No, but that's not why we distribute books. Why do we distribute books? Because the conditioned souls are suffering, because they've forgotten Krishna. That's why we go out. And then at the end of the day, if we happen to be the number one, then that's great. Okay, we're number one. But actually, we'd be happier with all the other devotees if we were the last on the list, because that means more books were going out. And that's actually our mentality. So mode of passion means we're very much absorbed in the service. We're sincere, but we're very much absorbed on our own, how it affects us, as opposed to how it pleases Guru and Krishna. So then, Prabhupada explains to us that best is that we learn to do devotional service in the mode of goodness. What is the symptom of the mode of goodness?
Knowledge.
Knowledge and happiness. Right? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Satvam, Jnanam, can't remember. Satvam, Sanjayate, Jnanam. Krishna says, from goodness comes knowledge. Like that. So Krishna says the qualities in the mode of goodness, the devotion, devotees become very peaceful and very happy and content, and they become absorbed in knowledge or illuminated. And this type of devotional service which is done in the mode of goodness, will help us, Prabhupada describes, springboard to Vishuddha Sattva, or pure goodness. You'll become a pure devotee, because the mode of goodness means the devotees are peaceful, they're respectful, they're tolerant, they respect all of the other devotees, right? And they have this nice mood. Right? And this is what devotional service means. It means you must respect all of the other devotees. Do you hands up if you have a right to yell at the other devotees? Hands up. So why do we keep hearing all this yelling going down in the kitchen? Right? You've just said you don't have the right, but you keep doing it like that. So where is your right? No. You should be respecting the devotees. No? That's why Prabhupada said you must call the devotees Prabhu. Prabhu means you are the master. Right? Instead of thinking I am the Prabhu and therefore I can yell at you, you think, no, I am the servant and I'll speak to you respectfully. Right? It takes just as much energy to yell at someone as it does to just speak to them respectfully and ask them to do the same thing. Prabhu, can you please move the pot? Or you can say, Prabhu, can you... Right? Throw the spoon at the wall. Prabhu, move that. Yeah, what's the thing? You can just say, Prabhu, can you please move the pot? If you're a leader, if you're an actual leader, if you're actually a leader, you'll command respect. Right? You don't have to demand it. Right? You don't have to, like, crunch everyone. You just, if you're actually respected, right, as the leader, because some devotees become the leaders, right, then if the devotees respect you, they'll just do what you say. Why? Because you're loving and you're affectionate. That's what leadership means. Leadership is vatsalya bhav. Vatsalya bhav means the way the parent feels about the child. That's the way the leader or the senior devotees feel about the junior devotees. Right? The senior devotees feel like the junior devotees are dependent upon me and I have to look after them. Right? It is my duty to protect them in devotional service. Right? And then when the junior devotees feel that that's how the senior devotees feel, then they'll do anything for the senior devotees. So you don't have to yell at them. You don't have to throw the spoon at the wall. Right? All you have to do is just ask them politely and they'll do it for you. Like that. And then, if someone's acting inappropriately, okay, then you can get a little bit heavy. Like that. But it shouldn't be like the overriding general tone. It doesn't make any sense. Right? People, we'd go and distribute our books, people read our books, they say, wow, the Hare Krishnas are so nice, this philosophy is so nice, they come to the temple, and then they walk into the temple and the first thing they hear is some, you know, pot, down the pot shed being thrown against the wall, and it doesn't make any sense. And this devotee's yelling at that devotee and the devotees are arguing, it doesn't make any sense. That's not what they read about in the books. Right? So what we read in the books is should be what should be in the movement. Right? That's how Prabhupada attracted everyone in the beginning, because Prabhupada was the living Bhagavatam. Whatever is in the Bhagavatam, then Prabhupada personified that. Right? And that's why everyone joined this movement. Your hands up why you joined this movement. Let's tell why you joined this movement. I joined this movement because of Prabhupada. Right? He's our grandfather. Right? And as the generations go on for thousands of years from now, right, it's all going to be coming from one person. Right? He is the inspiration for the entire movement. He is Lord Chaitanya's pure representative. And then, all of his representatives are simply representing Prabhupada. Right? Everyone in this movement represents Prabhupada. He is our grandfather. Right? This is my guru Maharaj. Right? And my param guru is Srila Prabhupada. My guru is the most sincere servant, or is a most sincere servant of Prabhupada. And now I'm trying to become their sincere servant, and in turn this self-disciplic succession continues. And then our movement becomes powerful and potent, like that. So Krishna says here, this is what the material world is made of, these three elements. Right? And as devotees, we have to learn to situate ourselves in the mode of goodness and practice devotional service in the mode of goodness. This will help us to advance more. You have to be very careful of the mode of passion and ignorance, because they are very negative for devotional service. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Just stay awake for a few hours, because in a few hours Krishna will smash you. So if you're feeling proud in the morning, just wait till the afternoon. Krishna will make an arrangement to smash your pride. Two very good ways is that if you're feeling proud, then become a menial servant for the devotees. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's guru, said that everyone in the Gaudiya Math, he gave them the instruction they should render 5 menial services to the other devotees every day. So I remember when I was living in the Brahmachari Ashram, then we come from Mangalati, and by between 4:30 in the morning and 8:30 in the morning, in between when Mangalati began and when Bhagavatam class finished, I tried to do 5 menial services for the devotees in that time. So it means that when Mangalati's on, then you can take the lamp around, or you can sprinkle the water on the devotee's head, and then Charanamrita, you can serve out the Charanamrita, right? And then when the devotees, after the kirtan or after the class or whatever it is, then when they're paying their obeisances, you go and get the mats for them, put the mats down. So it means that by the end of the morning program, you can pretty much fulfill your quota. You can already have 5 menial services done. And devotees like to do service, they don't like to accept service. And then you can serve prasadam to the devotees. And then, during the day, you can just do so many other services. You don't think, oh well, you know, it's 8:30 in the morning, I've done my quota, I've done 5, now everyone can start looking after me. No, then that just inspires you, now I can do more and more services for the devotees during the day. Another way to become humble is that you compare yourself to great devotees. If you're becoming proud, then just read Prabhupada's Leelamrita. Right? And if you read the Leelamrita, you'll probably become humble quite quickly. And if you don't, that means you've got some serious problems. Is that okay?
In a corner.
Talking about my life philosophy before, let's start off. What's the difference between Brahmavadi and
Mayavadi? Difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi is that the Brahmavadis are not sure what the absolute truth is, but they don't discount that it could be a person. They're just not sure, that's all. They think it might be Brahma, it might be Shiva, it might be Krishna, it might be Vishnu, it might be impersonal, it might be, but they're not sure. So it's Brahmavadi. They're interested in understanding what is spirit. Mayavadis say that form is Maya. They say that God's form is Maya, and behind the form is the absolute truth. And what is the absolute truth? It is impersonal. So then they are described as being asuric, or they're offenders to Krishna. They offend Krishna because they say Krishna's form is false and they want to destroy that form. Therefore, they get the same destination as the demons. When Krishna kills the demons, then they go to the Brahma Jyoti. And when the Mayavadis, if they become realized in their in Brahman realization, they also go to the Brahma Jyoti. Because what do the demons want to do? They want to remove Krishna's head, remove his arms, remove his legs. They want to kill Krishna, right? And what do the Mayavadis want to do? Take away his form, right? Remove his head, remove his arms, like nothing like that. So they get the same destination. Any other questions or comments? Say it again.
How to get rid of anatta of puja and pratishtha?
Yeah, pratishtha means that we want to be adored by all of the other deities. So same answer that we gave to Bhakti Ani, then you have to develop humility. It means you have to become a menial servant. Pratishtha means you want to be recognized by everyone else, right? So don't worry about yourself so much. No one else is worried about you. Right? We think, my service is so special. No one else is really noticing. Not that they're not noticing, but it means that the only person who's giving us all the credit in our mind is what's going on in our own mind, is ourselves. We're giving ourselves so much credit. Everyone else is just thinking, oh, they're a nice devotee, they do nice service. But we're thinking, I might be the new founder of Acharya of Crossways. soon they'll start putting my pictures up around the place. we start, in our mind we think all sorts of things. Yeah, like you're offering the arti to the deities, right? Right, and then you notice that while you're offering your arti, your little pinky's sticking out, right? Like that. So you're offering the arti, and then you think, oh, my little pinky's sticking out. Wow, that looks weird. And then you're doing Mangal arti, and then when you're offering the lamp to the deities, then you put your hand right out to the side so that everyone can see around the pillar, they can see your little pinky. And that's it. So the only person in the universe who is noticing your pinky is you. Everyone else is looking at Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna, right? And Krishna's looking at you and he's thinking... Krishna's just thinking, I've seen some good ones so far since I came to the material world as a deity, but this is good. This is the way we think. You think, I'm so significant. The way I do the service is so good. When I lead the kirtan, the way I sing is so good. I say, Kibha Jayo, Jayo. And we just become intoxicated. Right. But the only one who really cares is us. No one else really cares. Everyone else is thinking, oh, it's a nice kirtan. And Dorothy sings nicely, nice kirtan. They're a very good kirtan leader. But we're just like, we're just so absorbed. So good. You know, we think, oh, I should lead the kirtan because then all the other devotees will really have a good kirtan if I lead. So it's better I lead than the other devotees lead. No. But the mood of the devotee is to push the other devotees forward. Like that. Not thinking I am the best. Like that. That is pratishtha. Like that. So does that answer your question a little bit?
In specific, how to get rid of that? Like, the, for example, Krishna book, 8th chapter, after reading, you read in particular anatta. So, in practical, what is the exact solution to get rid of this kind of anatta?
Yeah, I already said in the other answer, then you just serve the devotees. Become a servant. Don't worry about just being a servant. Don't worry about being... Pratishtha means prominence. I'm prominent. Then just make yourself unprominent and serve the other devotees. Read the Lilamrita, right, and then understand that you're nothing. You know, like I walked into the temple, I think last night or this morning, I just walked in and I just thought, you know, the same place I walked into 20 years ago. Right, I walked in here, I knew nothing. I still walk in here, I still don't really know anything. And all this just came about by Srila Prabhupada's potency. One person developed all these hundreds of temples around the world. Now I can travel anywhere in the world. I can walk into any temple, which is created by Srila Prabhupada, and I've got a home, I've got a family. Everything was given to us by Prabhupada. All we do is do a little bit of service in one of the little temples around the world. Right, we're not the founder of Acharya or anything like that. But the tendency is whenever we walk through the temple door, then our false ego is so big it's hard for us to even get in the door. Everyone's like, oh, here comes the elephant again. It's like, you know, like that. So just be humble. Just try to learn to serve the devotees. It takes time, but just learn to become a menial servant. And if you get any credit, then offer that credit to your guru. That's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada never accepted the credit himself. He said, my spiritual master. And then he would pass the credit. So that is the devotional mentality. Give the credit to others. Don't take it yourself. Is that okay? Okay. Any other question? Comment?
How to distinguish and not to mix enthusiasm in devotional service and mind of passion?
Yeah, between the two. Because when you're enthusiastic, then you're doing it for Krishna, you're doing it for the Guru, you're doing it for Prabhupada. When you're mode of passion, then you're doing it for you. So you have to, like Lord Brahma, when he created this material world, he used the mode of passion to create the material world. But he prayed to Krishna, he said, don't let me become influenced by the mode of passion. So if you go out on book distribution, then you have to get a little bit passionate. You know, otherwise you might not get out the door. So you have to be a little bit passionate. You need to go out there and the people are walking. You have to be a little bit focused on that. But don't start getting into the... Don't let passion control you. In other words, don't become fruitive. You know, I used to go and distribute books and then sometimes I'm thinking, you know, I've got to get these books out because I've got to be number one this week. You know, and then like I'm just getting the book out. But then that's the mode of passion. Whereas I could be out there and I could be thinking, oh, here come the conditioned souls. They don't know anything about Krishna. Right, I got the mercy and now I have to give the mercy to them also. So you're still working just as hard with so much enthusiasm and energy, but the motivation is different. So you have to learn to adjust and control and purify things. So. Anything else?
So when we do go out and focus and so it's really hard to develop that sort of compassion. You sort of just do it as a duty. And you offer them a book and they reject, and you know, you might feel bad because you know you got rejected. Or and you, how do you tell the difference whether they missed out a chance or that you got rejected?
Yeah, so you have to develop some real compassion. This movement's real, just like at the Sunday feast at the farm the other day. Then after the lecture, then I was speaking to one of the people who came, and they said. Something I can't remember what they said, but then I said to him, I said, this is real. I said, we're not just doing this, you know, we don't just wear dresses, you know, we don't just, you know, dress up and shave our heads and put on, you know, clay on our face and everything. Because it's like, it's, oh, it's really spiritual or something. No, it's real. We're actually trying to realize God. So our movement is real. Prabhupada came for a real purpose. He didn't come like right back to all his God brothers, oh, I did it. I did what Bhakti Sananda Saraswati did. I fulfilled Mahaprabhu's prediction. No, he did it because he cared about everyone. So if you want to be real, if you want to make some advancement, then you have to become real. You have to understand people are suffering. And you want to change the world. You actually want to help the world become Krishna conscious. That's our motivation. So that takes time to develop, but you have to develop that mood. Is that okay?
So just go ahead.
No, yeah, it means that we do our duty. Just like in the beginning, one of Prabhupada's disciples said, Prabhupada, I don't feel like offering my obeisances to you. Prabhupada said, then do it anyway, and the feeling will come. Right? So then you do it. You do the activity, because you've got the order of the guru, go out and distribute books, and then the feeling will come. But understand what the actual feeling should be and aspire to get it. Right. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of our movement if we all just remain these Kanishta neophyte devotees? How's our movement going to expand? If we don't become purified, you know, and we don't make some advancement, then how's our movement going to expand? How are we going to give real shelter to someone else? If everyone comes to our movement, right, and they just say we're just a bunch of materially motivated devotees, it's not going to attract people, and we're not going to go very far ourselves, and we won't key people in our movement. Any other points?
As you have mentioned, devotional service in one is not in one question. So if someone is offering devotional service in one of Gopis, if he identifies the other servant in one of the ignorance, how he can help others? What the steps can be taken? As you have given some examples.
How can we help others who are in that mode? Is that what you're, I'm not sure.
How can we help them, or how can we show them the way he's behaving?
Oh, if someone is throwing the pots in the kitchen and yelling, then how can we help them? Then people only listen to people they respect. So you find someone they respect, right? And then you say to them, Prabhu, this devotee keeps yelling and throwing the pots. Right? And then you say, can you please speak to him? And then that devotee says, yeah, okay, I'll speak to them. Right? And then you go to them and say, Prabhu, please don't throw the pots. Please don't yell. It's not necessary. Like that. And then he says, yes, Prabhu, I'll do that for the rest of my life. I'll never do it again. Hopefully. Takes time. Let's see, it takes time for people to become purified. But Prabhupada's main criteria with his disciples, he wanted to see them improving. He didn't want to see them making the same mistake year after year after year. Right? So we should see devotees improving. Okay, it takes time because it's a hospital, so it takes time to get better. But we should see improvement over time. Not 5 years, 10 years, you're still doing the same things you used to do. Like that. Has to be some improvement. Any other question?
Just one last question. This is not relevant to the branches on behalf of Sri Krishna Mahaprabhu. So is that today is the third day of the month week. So the question is the third day is the day of your gentleman's appearance here, or standard is the when the whole
his appearance day, I have heard, but I can't remember. Does anyone remember? I think it's Snanyatra for memory. Does anyone remember Jagannath's appearance day? I think it's Snanyatra for memory. There is an appearance. In Jagannath Puri, they celebrate, there's a day when he appears. Like that. And I think it's Snanyatra, it might be. I can't remember. There is a day, but I can't remember. I don't think it's Rathyatra, though. Like that. Today, what time is it now? Another 5 hours, like that. He's just they're waking him up at the moment. Mangaladi's going on in Jagannath Puri. It's very hot there, really, really hot. And there's about 1 million people will be out in the street in the next few hours. And Jagannath's going to come out of the temple. It takes him hours to come out of the temple, and devotees are waiting there, and it's so hot. Right, and devotees, Sachinandan Swami was there a few years ago, he was telling us, he said they were waiting there for hours and hours and hours and waiting for them to come. It was so hot and big kirtans going on, so much noise and it's like that, and just, and everyone's like just sweltering in the heat. And then suddenly they begin to come out. Baladev comes out like that, and when he comes out, if you've seen the video when he comes out, it's like, you know, it's awesome. Now you get an understanding of what is God when Balaram comes out. You know, he comes out and it's like, you know, they're beating, they're playing the gong. He's like, boom, 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 boom. He comes, he just marches out, intoxicated. And he comes out, he's moving around, and then suddenly they, somehow they move him up onto his chariot, and then Subhadra comes out. And then finally, Jagannath comes out, and Sachinandan Swami said when he came out, he said they're all there and it was so hot and they'd been waiting for hours, like 6 hours, just standing there in one spot and millions of people. You know, it's just not what you got. And then suddenly Jagannath comes out and he said like this cool breeze just suddenly came over everyone. Scented breeze, like smell. And everyone just became refreshed like that. And the Jagannath came out totally intoxicated. Like that. And they were just boom, boom, boom. Yeah, they play. You've got to see the video, what happens. It's just amazing. And then he comes out, and then he begins to moan. He's just so intoxicated. And he's just so much. The next thing, he's just rolling around. And there's like 12 people trying to carry him, trying to move him to get onto the chariot. And he's just moving wherever he wants. And everyone's just trying, you know, he's just marching, he's intoxicated, and then he gets up onto the chariot finally. And then they begin to take him to Vrindavan. He's so intoxicated because he's going back to Vrindavan to be with Radharani and all the devotees again. So this is Ratha Yatra. We won't talk about it now because it takes a long time to describe Ratha Yatra. So, okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki.